All right, so today we're going to talk about relationships. We've been talking for the last few weeks about the fact that you and I were born into a world at war. And we're going to talk today about how these battles, how this warfare we've been talking about affects our relationships. Because the truth is, our relationships are a target for the enemy, especially marriage. So we're going to talk a lot today about marriage, but what we're going to talk about as far as relationships applies to a lot of different kinds of relationships as well. So wherever you are in life, hopefully there's something in here today that's going to be beneficial for you. In the beginning, God said something interesting. God said that it was not good for us to be alone. It was also good for us to put our phones on silent. So, sorry, I didn't mean to embarrass you, Kevin. It's all good. That was Kevin. No, just we love you, Kevin. So God said it was not good for us to be alone. And so God created Eve, and he brought Adam and Eve together as husband and wife, one man and one woman, in this unique relationship called marriage, where they are committed to one another sacrificially and unconditionally for life. And just think about that statement. It is not good for us to be alone. The sad reality is it's possible to be married and still be completely alone. Why is that? Why is it that so many marriages are unhealthy, emotionally detached, or come to an end? That was never God's intention for marriage. God's intention for marriage is that marriage should be fulfilling and life-giving. That marriage was intended to be the most intimate, the most emotionally connected relationship two human beings can experience. God's plan for marriage is that it would be a source of contentment and joy and fulfillment, that it would be the example of what genuine, sacrificial, unconditional love looks like. Why is it that that description fits so few marriages? One of the reasons is because marriage is opposed. Marriage is under attack. It's important for us to understand that we have an enemy who does everything he can to undermine and destroy marriages. So I want to begin by talking briefly about God's plan for marriage. What did God envision when he brought Adam and Eve together, when he said husband and wife? What was his idea behind all of that? We're going to go, first of all, to Mark chapter 10. Look at what Jesus said about marriage. He says, God made the male and female from the beginning of creation. This explains why a man leaves his father and mother and is joined to his wife, and the two are united into one. First of all, he makes it clear there is a difference, despite what our culture says and despite what the media says, there is a difference between men and women. There is male and there is female. God created us unique and distinct from one another. We both bear the image of God, right? As men, we bear the image of God, certain characteristics of his, of who he is. And as women, you bear certain characteristics of the image of God. We are different from one another, and those differences are on purpose. Those differences are actually designed to generate oneness, to bring us together as one. And that's the plan that God had all along for marriage, is that marriage is supposed to be a relationship of oneness, which means intimacy that is exclusive to that relationship that exists in no other relationship. And notice what Jesus says here, that the husband and wife, they leave behind other relationships, and now this relationship, the marriage relationship between husband and wife, that becomes the priority. That becomes the most important relationship to them, above all others. And throughout the New Testament, it spells out what that is supposed to look like. In Ephesians chapter 5, look at what it says for husbands. Verse 25, husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. God's calling for husbands is that we are to love our wives in the same way as Christ has loved us. What does that mean? Sacrificially. He gave himself up for us. He sacrificed for us. He set aside his wants, his needs, and his desires so he could meet our needs. And he says, husbands, love your wives in the same way. He goes on to say that Jesus brings the best out of us, and as husbands, we are to do that for our wives as well. So this is what marriage looks like. Husbands loving their wives unconditionally and sacrificially. He goes on and says this in verse 22, wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord. What that means is to show respect to give support to. And that's important because every man has a question. The question is, do I have what it takes? Do I measure up We want to be seen as capable and competent. And one of the things that is one of the most honoring and meaningful things that Sheila does for me as my wife, especially when I'm facing a challenge that I'm not sure I can deal with, when I have a lack of confidence because of something I have to face and I don't know, can I handle this? Can I fix this problem? One of the things she says to me often that is so meaningful to me is this: I believe in you. And I can't tell you how important that is for me to hear that from her. And that's what marriage looks like, is the husband loving the wife sacrificially and the wife honoring, encouraging, and supporting the husband. And notice, in all things here, Christ is at the center, right? As husbands, we are to follow Christ's example in how we love our wives. As wives, it says, honor your husbands as an act of worship to Christ. Christ is at the center of all of this. And so God's plan for marriage is that it would benefit both husband and wife, but also that it would be an expression of worship to God. And so, of course, it is opposed by the enemy. That's God's plan for marriage, that husbands love sacrificially and wives submit lovingly. This is what marriage looks like. So God's plan from the beginning was that husbands and wives would work together to build a strong and a healthy home. That's what God intended, that this would be a relationship that is fulfilling, that is enjoyable, that is intimate, that is closely connected, a relationship of oneness that honors God and points others towards him. That's his intention for marriage. And the enemy, Jesus said, came to steal and kill and destroy. We're going to talk today about one of the ways he does this. 2 weeks ago, we talked about something called agreements. And I want to encourage you, if you weren't here 2 weeks ago, it'd be helpful to listen to that podcast from 2 weeks ago talking about agreements, because it's a very important message on one of the ways the enemy works in our thought lives and how we can combat that. It applies not only to our relationship with Christ, but also to our relationships with others. And that's what we're going to look at today. Let me just do a quick recap from a couple weeks ago. When we go through trials and struggles, when we face difficulties in life, one of the things we do is we talk to God about it, right? It's called prayer. We go to God and we say, God, here's what I'm dealing with and I need your help. And that's very important. I've also talked many times about the importance of not only us talking to God about our problems, but listening to what God has to say to us. Because in the middle of our trials and tragedies, God has something to say to us. There's guidance he has. There's encouragement he has. There's comfort he has. God wants to speak to us in the middle of those times. And it's very important for us not only to talk to God, but to listen to him when we go through those difficult times as well. Where it becomes complicated is the fact that not only does God speak to us, but in those difficult times, the enemy speaks to us as well. And what he has to say is an interpretation of those events that causes us to question God's love or God's goodness or our value to him. And it usually goes something like this. A prayer goes unanswered. A sickness is not healed. That miracle you really needed God to do on your behalf, it didn't happen. A financial need popped up that you had no resources to handle with, and it just came out of nowhere. And now you're left wondering, God, how could you let this happen to me? When we go through those kind of trials, the enemy whispers to us an interpretation of what that means about God or about ourselves. And it usually goes something like this. See that? God doesn't care about you. God never answers your prayers. You notice how God answered that person's prayer, but he didn't answer yours. Isn't that interesting? You go to church and you sing about God's goodness and God's love and how awesome God is. Really? With what God let happen to you, with what God did in your life, do you really believe he's good? Those are called agreements. Does that sound familiar? We all experience that when we go through trials and when we go through disappointments. And many times, something inside of us, when we hear that voice, something inside of us agrees with that interpretation. Yeah, that's true. God doesn't answer my prayers. God doesn't come through for me. God must not love me. God probably does have favorites because he did this for this person, but he didn't do it for me. And when we latch onto those agreements, what happens is a wall of distrust grows between me and God. because I believe now God must not believe in, God must not care about me. God must not care about what I need and what I deal with and what I hurt. And so this gap opens up between me and God and begins to widen. When we go through trials and tragedies, the enemy speaks to us because he wants to distance us from God. The same thing is true when we go through conflict. Just as the enemy has something to say to us, an interpretation of why God allows things to happen in our lives, in the same way, he has something to say to us about that other person and their motives whenever there's conflict, when there's a disagreement, when we feel misunderstood, when we are hurt or offended by another person. When those things happen in our relationships, our enemy, who roams around like a lion looking for an opportunity, looking for a vulnerability, he speaks to us. And what he speaks is an interpretation of what this means, why this person did that, what they were trying to accomplish by what they said or what they did, an assumption of their motives. And it usually sounds something like this. There she goes again. She did it again. Aren't you tired of this? She's always nagging you. Why does she do that all the time? Right? Or maybe it goes like that. Do you see that? He doesn't care about you. He doesn't understand you. He never listens to you. Your needs don't matter to him at all. This is never going to change. Does that sound familiar? And again, when we hear that voice, something inside of us agrees with it because it confirms what we're feeling in the moment. When we feel hurt, when we feel misunderstood, and then those agreements come in, it's easy for us to latch on to that and to say, yeah, that's true. She's always nagging me. She's so controlling. He doesn't care about me. He never listens. And when we latch on to those agreements, a wall begins to build between us and that other person. A gap opens and begins to widen. Now, I want to clarify what I'm talking about here as we move towards this a little bit further. I'm not talking about cases of abuse. That's a whole different issue. What I'm talking about right now are not those massive issues that need to be resolved. I'm talking about those times when we misinterpret somebody's motives, when somebody does something just in the course of everyday life and we assign a motive behind it. It's those little disagreements that if they're not resolved, they can grow into much bigger things. And what the enemy wants to do by escalating those small disagreements is he wants to convince you that the other person is the source of your problems. Your wife, she's the cause of all your grief and problems. Your husband, all of the stuff that you deal with, it's his fault. It's because of him. If only you weren't with that person, everything would be so much better in your life. That's what the enemy wants to convince us of, is to blame our spouse or to blame that other person for all of our problems. And again, this is why Paul reminds us in Ephesians 6:12, we are not fighting against flesh and blood enemies, but against evil rulers and authorities in the unseen world, against mighty powers in this dark world, and against evil spirits in the heavenly places. I've said it before, your marriage is under attack, and your spouse is not the enemy. So here's how this often works. I want to suggest a couple of scenarios, and these are very unlikely scenarios. When you hear these, you're probably going to think, well, that's ridiculous. That would never happen in a marriage. There's no way that, no, that's just crazy. But try to use your imagination as best you can, okay? So here's the first one. Ladies, imagine this unlikely scenario. You get home and his socks, his dirty, smelly socks, they're right there in the middle of the floor again. Or they're like hanging off the couch. They're like stuck there by some unknown substance, right? And you've told him about this and you've said, please just take 2 seconds and put them in the dirty clothes pile. Again, I know this is ridiculous and unlikely. It would never happen to any of you. But let's you see that. And then in the kitchen, there's this foul smell coming from the kitchen and you realize, oh, he said he was going to take care of the dishes for me so I wouldn't have to. But the dishes from supper last night and breakfast this morning, they're still in there and they're piled up. And now all the food, I'm just going to have to chisel it off there because it's like stuck. And there's some weird, funky smell coming from the sink. So again, ridiculous, right? None of this would ever happen. But let's just say it did. You see his socks there on the floor and you've told him about that. The dishes are in the sink and he said he would take care of it. What are some thoughts that might come to your mind when you see this? Audience participation time.
Nobody wants to say anything.
If I can't say
Just the ladies. Just the ladies. That's probably true.
I don't care about me.
What's that?
He don't care about me.
He doesn't care about me. What else?
Seriously, how many children do I have?
Okay. How many children do I actually have in this house? That might, yeah.
He never listens.
He never listens.
Any other? Just do a big
sigh
and a huge eye roll.
Like. Big sigh, huge eye roll. Yeah. How about this? Would any of these come to mind? He takes me for granted. I work so hard and he doesn't appreciate all the work that I do. How about this one? He never thinks about my needs. He's only thinking about himself. Or how about this one? He expects me to clean up after him. Mm-hmm. Like he can just go around and make a mess and leave it for me. And I noticed some agreement there with that. Now, here's the deal. You notice how quickly we can go from socks and dishes to, no, this actually reveals something terrible about this person. When it goes there, that comes from someone. That's an agreement. Now, men, imagine this unlikely scenario, okay? The two of you are going out somewhere. Maybe you're going out to dinner. Maybe you're going out shopping. Or maybe you're going to see a movie way back when that used to be a thing, right? So you're on your way there. You're driving. And the place you're headed to, you've been there 1,000 times. You know exactly where you're headed. You know exactly how to get there. And guys, you know exactly where this is headed, don't you? Yet somewhere, like you could drive there blindfolded without any help. Yet somewhere along the way, she says something like this. Make sure you turn up here. Wait, why are you going this way? The other way is so much quicker. Whoa, you're way too close to that guy. Slow down. Now, again, I know, unlikely scenario, right? But just imagine she does that fairly often. What are some things? Maybe I'm hitting too close to home. Guys, what are some things that might come to mind if you're brave enough to say it out loud?
Do you want to drive?
Maybe let's just pull over and here you go. You drive, right? What else?
Do you trust me?
Right? What else?
She thinks I'm stupid.
What else? Kevin is being put on the spot again. Let's move on. How about this? Any of these? You kind of said, she must think I'm an idiot. But she think I'm stupid. She think like, since the last time we were there 2 days ago, I forgot somehow how to get there, right? How about this one? She does this all the time, right? That one? I know, guys, you don't want to nod or say anything. Just blink fast if you notice any of these things, right? Or how about this one? She's so controlling, right? Now, again, notice how quickly we can go from, okay, she's giving me driving instructions to, no, this reveals something about her. And that something is not good. That's called an agreement. Those thoughts come from someone. The father of lies, these are called agreements. The father of lies puts his spin on a simple comment, a simple situation, and suggests to us an interpretation of that comment or that situation. This reveals something about your spouse. Here's what they really mean by that. She doesn't appreciate you. He'll never change. She always does this. He never listens to you. And by the way, anytime you hear the words never and always, that's a red flag that this is an agreement being suggested to you. And again, it makes sense to us in the moment because those agreements, they confirm what we're feeling in the moment. When we feel frustrated, when we feel offended, when we feel angry, when we feel upset, and that thought comes in that says, he did this because, she said that because, that agreement makes sense to us and it's easy for us to latch on to it. Now, there are two sides to this that I think are really important for us to understand as far as dealing with these kinds of thought patterns when it comes to our relationships with each other, especially marriage. It's really important for us to know, first of all, sometimes we do things that make our spouse vulnerable to agreements. There are certain things we do that make it easy for our spouse to believe those agreements, to assume the worst about us. We talked a couple weeks ago about in Ephesians where it says that anger gives a foothold to the devil. Do you remember that? Where unresolved emotions can actually give the enemy an opportunity into our lives, into our thought lives. Just like if somebody's trying to get into your house and you're pushing the door closed, but they get a foot in the door. Now you can't get the door closed. They have access. In the same way, unresolved emotions, they give opportunity for the enemy to mess with us and to interfere in our lives. Wives and husbands, sometimes we do things that nudge that door open a little bit for our spouses to receive an agreement that give the enemy access into their thought lives. So here's a couple of suggestions with that. Men, when you promise to do something to help your wife and then you don't, when you're too busy with everything else to where you don't have time for her, when she's trying to have a conversation with you, but you're focused on the TV or on your phone and you just go, uh-huh, those kind of things. When you expect her to do all the housework and you rarely, if ever, help. When you do those kind of things, you are providing an opportunity for the enemy to tell her, see how selfish he is? He takes you for granted. He doesn't care about you. He only cares about his own needs and wants. When you do those things, you are setting her up to believe those agreements. Wives, when you constantly correct your husband, when you argue with him over things that really aren't that important in the long run, when he buys you a gift or does something he thinks is thoughtful and it's not exactly what you would have done, and so you critique him for that, when you do those kind of things, you make it easy for him to believe things like, look how controlling she is. Why is she nagging you all the time? Doesn't matter how hard you try, it's never good enough for her. When you do those things, you open the door up, you are setting him up to buy into those agreements. So that's the one side of this that we need to be aware of, that it's important for us to take some time to identify, are there things that I do that nudge that door open? Are there things that I do or things that I say that make it easy for my spouse to believe the worst about me? What are those things that I need to change about how I'm handling this thing? Can I give you a hint, wives? Most men despise feeling controlled. So anything you do that could easily be interpreted as you trying to push him to do something he doesn't want to do or isn't ready to do, that opens wide the door for him to buy into an agreement. Can I give you a hint, husbands? Most women have a deep fear of feeling emotionally alone. And so anything you do that could be easily interpreted as you distancing yourself from her, putting her in a far lesser priority in life, letting everything else be more important to you than your relationship with her, overlooking her emotional needs, when you do those things, that opens the door wide for an agreement. So those are things that are important for us to know, that we play a role in either protecting our spouse or making them more vulnerable to buying into agreements. Now, the second part of this, the other side of this, is that sometimes we make agreements by assuming the worst. In 1 Corinthians 13, the love chapter, one of the things Paul says is he says, love is this and love is this. He says that love believes the best. Love believes the best about the other person. What agreements do is they tell us to believe the worst. Agreements try to get us to assume the worst motives of the other person. So let's be honest. Somebody says something or does something, you don't really know what they meant by it unless they specifically say what they meant, right? Like you're assuming their motives behind, well, he left his socks here because, or she's telling me which direction to go because. You're assuming what they mean by that unless they specifically say, here's why I said this, or here's why I did that. You're making an assumption. And we all know what happens when we make assumptions, right? When you assume, you make a big mistake. I don't know what you guys were thinking, but you make big mistakes, right, when we make assumptions. So let me just give you another scenario here and see if this makes sense to you about assuming the worst. You guys know my wife, and she's very expressive, right? She loves to have conversations. And so a lot of times when she gets home or when I get home, we want to, you know, she wants to talk. How was your day? Here's some things that happened today. She wants to talk. And that's good. That's one of the things I love about her. Let's say I get home and she's already there and I walk in the door and she's sitting there absolutely quiet, and she says nothing to me. What am I thinking? Right? What did I do? Not what is she upset about. Why is she upset at me? Right? What did I do wrong? Right away, I'm thinking, oh no, she's mad at me for something. Right? Guys, isn't that true?
Yep.
Now, I might be the only person. Here's where I could go with that in my mind. Tell me if I'm the only person that does this, or if you guys do this too. When I think somebody's upset with me, typically my mind goes into defensive mode. Am I the only one?
No.
Okay. All right. So where I could go with that is I could start to build arguments about why she has no right to be upset with me. Right? Oh, she's probably angry because of this. Well, that's no big deal. Why is she so upset about that? What about when she did this? I should be the one upset at her. She should have, right? Have you ever done this? So you think somebody's upset and you construct this scenario in your mind where you have this argument and you come out on top and you win because they were so wrong and you were so right. We do this, don't we? So my mind could easily go there when the truth is I'm upset and I'm angry and I'm defensive and I feel distant from her for literally no reason. Like the only thing that actually happened was she was quiet. That's it. Like she did nothing hurtful. She said nothing offensive. All of the upset, all of the frustration, all of the anger is there completely because of a conversation I'm having in my head about why she's quiet. And this happens all the time. These are assumptions. These are agreements. And they happen all the time in marriages. Oh, why didn't she call me? Why didn't he text me? Why is she asking me all these questions? Why doesn't he say anything to me? And the enemy suggests an interpretation. Here's why. He didn't text you because he's trying to hide something from you. She's asking you all these questions because she doesn't trust you. And the goal of that interpretation is not to provide an answer, but to provoke division. When we assume motives, true or false, we usually assume bad motives. We usually don't assume, well, they're doing this for some amazing, glorious reason, right? We usually, our mind goes to the worst case scenario. They're doing this because it's some terrible thing. And so when we do that, you're already mad before he even walks in the door. You're already offended before she even says anything. And yet, 9 times out of 10, there's no real reason for it. The enemy suggested an interpretation, and we agreed with it. We bought into it. That's why communication is so vital. So again, back to this scenario. So I walk in the door, and Sheila is sitting there quietly. And I don't know why. Maybe she got some bad news from a family member. Maybe she had a frustrating day at work. Maybe it's just one of those days. We all have days like that, right? Where it's just, I just don't feel good. I just want to be left alone. We all have days like that. I don't know why she's sitting there quietly, but here's what I've discovered. There's a way to find out. I have a bachelor's degree in communication and a master's degree in marriage counseling. And I found out there's a really complicated technique for finding out an answer to that question.
Just rub my feet.
See, there it is, right? It's actually different than that, but thank you for this. Guys, that's important to know. Your wives love that. So here's what I could do. It's really complex, but I'll try to break it down and make it as simple as possible. Here's what I could do. I could ask her. I could ask her. And I know it's terrifying for guys to ask our wives, what's wrong? Or to say, okay, you seem upset or you seem down. Is there something we need to talk about? I know that's terrifying, but that's an important question, guys. It's an important question. What's going on? Can we talk? Can I help you? Communication is so important here. Why? Because assumptions do not lead to oneness. Assumptions do not build a relationship that is strong and close and healthy and intimate and life-giving. They just don't. But you know what does? Open, honest, loving communication. It's so important to dealing with those negative assumptions and to finding out why what happened happened. So what do we do with this? What do we do if we find that we've latched onto agreements and we're assuming the worst of our spouse? 2 weeks ago, when we talked about dealing with agreements that interfere with our relationship with Christ, I suggested these 3 steps. Break the agreement, invite Jesus to heal your wound, and listen to God's voice. The steps in dealing with agreements that interfere with our relationships with each other are very similar. Break the agreement, invite Jesus to heal you, and then listen to each other. Let's talk these through. Break the agreement. It's really important to pay attention to your thought life. Don't assume that just because a thought pops into your head, it is good or true or helpful. Paul tells us in 2 Corinthians 10:5, take every thought captive. Take every thought captive. So when that assumption jumps in that says, he did this because, she said this because, don't just let that go. Grab onto that and say, hold on, do I know that for sure? Or am I just making an assumption? Do I know that he did this because, or she said that because, or am I just assuming the worst? Or maybe this question, if I believe that assumption, if I believe the worst about their motives, is that going to benefit our relationship in any way? Is that going to help us? Is that going to strengthen us in any way? The point is, when those negative thoughts come in, and they do, don't just let them take root in your heart and in your mind. Question them. And whatever is false, whatever is not true, reject it, throw it out, and break that agreement. Here's the second thing. Invite Jesus to heal you. Invite him to heal the wound that welcomed that agreement. Because as I said 2 weeks ago, agreements always come from a wound or a disappointment. Always. And sometimes it was a wound that was inflicted from another relationship years ago that is now carrying over into this current relationship because we haven't found healing from that wound. Sometimes it's another person that violated your trust, and so you made a decision, I'll never trust anyone ever again. That was an agreement. And that decision not to trust anyone is interfering with your relationship right now. Wouldn't you agree with me? That's something that needs to be healed. So when you find that there's a wound in your heart, invite Jesus to step in and to heal that wound wherever it is. Or maybe it is a wound that was inflicted by the person you're with now. Sometimes those who know us most intimately have the capacity to wound us most deeply. Whatever it was, there was a wound that was inflicted that caused you to say, yes, she did this because, yes, he said that because. Wherever that wound is, ask Jesus to step in and to bring healing. That is so important. But here's the other part of this, the process of healing, and I hate to tell you this because I know it's not an easy sell. Forgiving the person who wounded you is a huge part of healing. It's essential, in fact. I think a lot of times our mindset is, I'll forgive this person, but I need to heal up some first before I can forgive them. The problem is that doesn't work. There is no healing without forgiveness. Making the decision to forgive the other person is the key to finding true healing. Now, there's a lot more than we have time to get into right now. So let me just encourage you to pray that through, to do some digging on what does forgiveness mean and what does it not mean? And then ask God to empower you to forgive the unforgivable. Think about this. When Jesus hung on the cross, before he was nailed to the cross, he was brutally beaten. And as he hung there dying for hours in absolute agony, his torturers, they mocked him. They laughed at him. Can you imagine anything worse than that? As he is hanging there, dying slowly in immense pain, they're laughing at him and making fun of his pain. And his response to that was, Father, forgive them. That God, if you're a follower of Christ, he lives in you. So you might look at the person who wounded you so deeply and say, I could never forgive them. That might be true, but you know who can? Christ in you, he can. So ask him, God, I know I need to forgive this person. I don't want to, and I'm not sure I can, but would you empower me to forgive them? Because I know I desperately need to do that. Invite Jesus to heal your wound, and forgiving that other person is probably going to be a big part of that process. Here's the third step. If you find that you've latched onto agreements that are interfering with your marriage, it's really important to listen to each other, to have a conversation together about this. As I said before, sometimes we do things that nudge the door open for our spouses. It's possible that your spouse has done something that has made it easy for you to assume the worst, to buy into an agreement, and they have no idea that they've done that. And so having a conversation is going to be really important if that's the case. In a non-confrontational way, without being accusatory, without trying to win an argument, just saying something like this. I'm not blaming you. I just want you to know how this affects me. When you say that you're going to do the dishes, but you don't, when you leave dirty socks laying around that I have to clean up, it's easy for my mind to assume that that means you don't care about my needs, that that means you're not willing to help me, that you expect me to do all the work around here. I don't want to assume that, and I know that's not your intention. I just want you to know it's a struggle for me. Or for men, it might sound something like this. I'm not blaming you, but I want you to know how this affects me. When you correct me on little things that really aren't that important, or when you critique me when I'm trying my best, it's easy for my mind to assume that you don't trust me or that you don't have any confidence in me. I don't want to assume that, and I know that's not your intention. I just want you to know when you do those things, it's a struggle for me. See, that's an open and honest communication without being accusatory. I'm taking responsibility for my feelings. I'm saying it's easy for me to assume this. I'm not blaming you. I'm just letting you know when you do this, it makes it easy for me to go here, and I don't want to do that. Or you might need to be the one that brings it up and says something like this. I just need to ask, are there things that I do that make it easy for you to assume the worst of me? Are there things that I do or say that make it easy for you to believe these agreements, that I'm selfish or that I don't care about you or that I never listen or that I'm always nagging you? What are the things I do that make it easy for you, that push that door open and give the enemy access to your thoughts about me? That's an important conversation to have if you find that you're latching onto agreements, assuming the worst about your spouse. So those are the three steps if you find that you've held onto agreements. Listen to each other. Invite Jesus to heal you. And break those agreements. God's plan for your marriage is for it to be healthy and fulfilling and life-giving. That is his intention for your marriage. And I encourage you to embrace that calling, to pursue that calling for your marriage. Don't listen to the enemy. Don't let him have any voice in your relationship. And don't believe the lie that your marriage has to be emotionally distant, has to be unfulfilling. It has to always be this way. It doesn't. Marriage is under attack, and your spouse is not the enemy. So I encourage you to fight for your marriage. So Father, I thank you this morning for marriage. I thank you that you have created this relationship that is so unique. And that your intention is that it would be life-giving and fulfilling, that it would have an impact not only on us, but on those around us. And I pray for the marriages here in our church. I pray that that would be true of these marriages, God, that there would be open and honest and loving communication, that conflicts would be resolved, that wounds would be healed, that forgiveness would happen. And God, that you would strengthen our marriages. I pray that you would speak to each of our hearts today, Father, and I pray for anyone here today who is just struggling with these issues we've talked about or with any other issues. God, I pray that you would step in and restore hope where hope is needed, that you would strengthen where strength is needed, that you would encourage where encouragement is needed. I thank you, Lord, that in every challenge we face, you are there with us. You've promised you'd never abandon us. You would walk with us through those challenges. And we choose to believe that, Lord, and we thank you. In Jesus' name, amen.